Well, Scott, here with Jeff, we're talking on Sharing the Burden Live about anger, about the 10th phase of our program that says we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So we're going to take that apart bit by bit and see what it really means, you know. And you can remember, too, folks, that all of these steps came from scriptural truths. So if you're a believer of some sort, especially a believer of what goes on in the Bible and in scripture, you'll know that probably. But and many people don't, and we often tell people we don't care if you have any religion or none or what you believe in. We welcome you. We want you to take part in our program. We use the wisdom from that literature as well as other literature, as well as the 12-step book of Alcoholics Anonymous, even though we're not here for addiction specifically. We're here for anyone who hurts in any kind of way, and those who are hurt by someone else who's hurt, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and on and on and on it goes. But anyway, we're taking apart this 10th phase, which says we continue to take inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Now, the first part of that, the first word is we. And that's a thing that's so key in this program. We learn in a hurry that I can't do much. I mean, I can do a lot of things to improve my emotional makeup, if you will, to improve my spirituality, you know, to cope in certain ways. I can learn a lot of things that way. And when I'm expressing feelings, when I'm expressing, you know, sentiments of any kind about anything, I need to use I statements because I can't tell how you feel or how Jay feels. Mm-hmm. And if I use a word, which my wife is famous for doing, and we always talk about it, she'll, you know, use the Unitarian sense of marriage as that we're one personality, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, we feel this way and we feel that way. Well, I'm sorry, dear, but I don't feel that way, mm-hmm. you know. And anyway, that's a very dangerous thing, and it doesn't sound like much. But it is. So, mm-hmm. So the fact that we need we to really heal and get on in this world, I must express as I. So, mm-hmm. a key point. Mm-hmm. Second word, continued. We've talked about inventories throughout this program. The beginning of inventory is in the fourth phase where we actually sit down and think about our past and, you know, who we are, how we got there, and all the good and bad things that we lived through. But basically, how did we arrive at now, and what have we gone through, and what do we have to work on? So that's what a moral inventory is all about. So, but now we do that as we learn the this way of life. We learn that we've got to fix things in a hurry if we want to be of any value to our fellow men, you know. And the more stuff, I believe, that we push down inside of us, the more that information has to be processed through. And so anything we push down and things we push down that we don't like about ourselves or happenings and so on, whether we take responsibility for them or not, go a long way towards contributing to what comes out of us. So, you know, we've got to, you know, put good stuff into us, and anything that's not so good, deal with it so that it doesn't get down inside. So, and we need to do it, and we need to do it in a hurry. Now, I don't know what you're like in that area, Jeff. I mean, how long does it take you to, you know, to amend a situation when it, generally, are you a slow guy, a fast guy, a procrastinator? No, yes.
I'm naturally a procrastinator. that's my a weakness, although at times holding out or not reacting is a good thing, right? So on the positive side, instead of just blowing up, you can, if you procrastinate that's a good thing, because you're not getting frustrated to the point where you're saying something inappropriate or with too much energy, let's put it that way. So sometimes procrastinating or holding back, I guess that's probably a better way. But in general, I'm a procrastinative person, but then sometimes I don't hurry to repair a situation either. And that is, I think, a negative. So when I do that, when I can process things in my head a lot, and I fix a lot of things in my head, but then it comes to the reality of a relationship, or, you know, that situation where you're dealing with another human being, whether it's a spouse, child, work relationship, client, whatever, whoever that person is, it's not always easy because they are 100% unique person. And sometimes that's just not so easy to repair. You're not sure. So in my head, I'm probably thinking, how are they going to respond when I do say something? See, then I'm already pre-thinking when I'm, and then if they answer like this, I'm going to, I'll have to look at it like that. And then if they answer like that, I'll have to, so I get a little jumbled in my thinking sometimes. Yeah. But, so then I don't do it. That's why you procrastinate. But anyway.
So you can, I guess one, not a cure, but one aid to that is this, thought about staying in the now, you know, rather than, you know, how will I, what if, and those scenarios can drive us nuts. And, you know, as we keep saying on the program, well, if we're always in now and we can never be in tomorrow and never be in yesterday, how is it we spend most of our time in places that we can't even be?
Right.
that we never are. Right. You know, has there ever been a time in your life when it wasn't now?
Right.
At that time.
What I try to do, I think more as I've gotten older, is initiate what I thought at a point in time. So if I thought it through and thought this is the best way to handle this, but the person's not with you right now.
Okay.
So then I have to keep it in my mind to initiate that when I see them.
Yeah.
So, I said something slightly to my son the other day, who's getting married next year, but, I just said, cause he's still at home and he's got a lot of the bills covered really through home.
Yeah.
But he is independent, he's saving his money. He's being responsible. There's lots of good things. But then I just said, you know, even though you're doing all that, it's still not going to be easy when you get out there, because then when you have your own place, you have to not only pay those bills, but all the other ones that you're still paying, that you're paying now. And so I kind of thought after, you know, I didn't have to say that. Doesn't sound bad. It sounded kind of mean to me after. So this was a few days ago. And then I thought it through and I thought, you know what? I need to say something, but I didn't want to say I'm going to apologize for saying that. I just thought, how am I going to say it? So anyways, yesterday I had it in my head to initiate some sort of repairing of that, and then it just happened yesterday when we talked. I kind of set things a little better.
Yeah. What did you say?
Well, actually, I can't even remember exactly what I said. It was not really related to that incident, but it was something else. It was another family situation that came up for him and his fiance and a party for her dad. So I just said, you guys really stepped it up and helped out with that, because there were a lot of people at that. So something kind of unrelated, but it's a supportive thing, saying I'm appreciating you in another way.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because, you know, the fact that it bothered you, you know, that you had said that, is kind of indicative that in your own head, your message may not have been exactly what your words were.
Right.
You know, your message might have been something like, you know, I mean, you know, you better thank the Lord that we don't have you paying what you really should be paying even here.
Right.
You know, so it's...
Yes. You kind of, because he's my son, he also knows me. You know, he's been raised, he's with his dad. When it comes to other relationships where it's a person that doesn't really know you, then that might even take more work to make it sound more receivable for the person.
I hear you. But actually, a good message, but I can see where you're coming from there. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on in this, and the inventory, we've talked about that a little bit, but the continuation that we continued, it's an ongoing process. And again, we're trying to get to where we can live our life on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to letting stuff, you know, as you mentioned, at home, not a particularly angry home, but people would tend to bury stuff until it came to the surface and boom, you know, and you know, and this is the extreme situation, but the people we visit in jails, and Jeff comes into jails with those folks, you know, they've often done things like that, and their explosion, and nobody knows this stuff, But an explosion may create a whole bunch of other explosions that may end up in pretty serious stuff, you know, and somebody gets sliced and, you know, it was an innocent stab, but the guy died because nobody attended him while he bled to death or whatever, you know. It's, it's not funny, but it's real. It's, it's the things we see and hear. So, dealing on an ongoing basis with, you know, especially anger, because buried anger is brutal stuff, you know, and you mentioned earlier, and I think the key is expression, you know, and we've got to express it in a sense now, but in a sense, not now, because while I'm angry, if I express that during the situation that triggered my anger, well, I'm going to blow up right then and there, and God knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I have to get away so that my brain can settle down and that I can come back with something reasonable but not angry, you know, but I have to do it reasonably close to now as opposed to down the line. So here we're faced with a bit of a paradoxical situation. We need to deal with it now so it doesn't get buried and festered and cause all that stuff.
Right.
But I can't deal with it now because it's in my face, my temperature's up, and I'm going to rip this guy's head off if I don't get out of here, you know. So so that doesn't work. But how we express, and that's another way. We can express anger in a lot of different ways. Healthily, maybe we can go and punch a punching bag for a little while. Whatever it takes. But we know every time we come back to the table, you know, with the same person or the same situation, the same argument, same discussion, we know as we approach the table whether we're ready or not. Because if we, you know, if the tension's mounting again as we come back, then we best, you know, not deal with that thing, you know. So it's a...
Well, and then we're also dealing with people sometimes who already predetermined, like, so you may decide to be changing in how you want to handle anger. Like, you want to say, this is what bothers me. But because you're around another person who isn't changing how they react to your expression, then they may set you off again. Or they may not receive it as nicely as you'd want them to receive that. And so, therefore, but I think trying to ourselves... be me, as you said, I, not just the we part, but I'm trying to change this. Continue to do that. Continue to do that. Over time, a person or people will start to see that you are changing, that I am changing how I'm feeling when I'm in a situation. You're starting to see the change, and our lives should be about change.
Should be evidence
of
change.
And we can all change for the better in some area or other, I mean, probably many areas. And so that's what I've realized is I'm responsible for my anger.
Exactly.
So I have to now change how I view my anger because it's not a fun way to live anyways. Because you get your stomach all knotted up.
That's
you,
right, yeah.
You know, and they say you have health issues out of all this anger pent up. So why not deal with it? And then why not treat others, as they say, as you would like to be treated? So if I think about that, then I'm coming at it better, and I feel better, even if the person is still not receiving that new expression of myself. But just keep at it. And then sooner or later, they're going to say, you know what, there's nothing I can do to work that guy up anymore. Well, that would be great.
Well, you know, it's interesting. What you described in many ways was what we call in the program making living amends. In other words, who we are speaks so loudly, we can't hear words people are saying. You know that expression? So, you know, if you say to somebody, well, you know, what you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear a word you're saying. You're probably saying something like, you know, the reality of you is coming through loud and strong, so you might as well forget using those nice words. But anyways, living amends is something I learned a long time ago through my son, you know, when he was told by a mentor in the program that the best thing you can ever do for your dad is to live a good life, you know. So make your amends by living properly and being the good son that you wish you could be or would be or so on. So that works. And then as we move on with this step and we say, okay, when we were wrong, and we know when we're wrong, let's face it, we promptly admitted it. So we took responsibility for the thing, whatever it was. And I've been told many times in life that we must take responsibility for where we are now. Mm-hmm. You know, and we said earlier, it's always now. So whatever I'm up to, I've got to take responsibility for the results. And I've got to live with that, cope with that, correct me. Never mm-hmm. correct you, because I can't correct you. I can't mm-hmm. fix you. I can't do anything about you. It took a lot of years to learn that, you know, manipulating and doing all the things that special sales training taught me to do was really not mm-hmm. the right thing to do in right. many cases, you know. Got a lot of money, but, you know, if the idea behind a true sales call is to get what's in your pocket into my pocket, then we're not really, you know, right. dealing fair. And a lot of it's like that. That's what it was. We were taught, like, you know, you're going to learn how to put a guy emotionally in the corner with the questioning to the point where he has to say yes, and then, you know, yeah. they ain't going to take his money. So. Not very nice, but, right. but true, you know. True.
Yes.
So promptly admitted it, and you know, again, you're only responsible, I'm only responsible, Jay's only responsible for our own side of the street. So you said something earlier about, you know, maybe the response of the other side of the table is not going to be, you know, maybe they're not going to back off just because I've decided, you know, I'm going too far in this and I'm starting to feel upset. You know, I've learned that if I'm feeling emotional, I need not make decisions. And the best thing I can do is zip up my mouth, because that's the one thing that can get people going and in a hurry, you right. know, and I have the face to do it without even trying. So, I mean, right. it's, I don't get that, but yeah. people tell me those things. So, you know, how do you express your anger and how did you express it in youth? You know, like that's another thing. Habitually, maybe we exploded. Maybe we waited till that all the time. Maybe we found some way to let it out. This is the basis for an addictive personality, too, or an addictive behavioral type scenario where, you know, I've got to escape this sense. Okay, I'm angry, I buried it, and I can't express it because I'm going to mess people up, and, you know, it's just unsafe. I don't like how I'm going to feel when I say that and all these things. So I've got to escape this. This is a very uncomfortable thing. You know, how am I going to escape this? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're somewhat wise and don't mind hurting your knuckles a little bit, you can go and punch a bag for a while. And, you know, the harder you punch, the more the damage. But in a sense, the more you get out of yourself. Or you can go to alcohol. You can go to drugs. You can go to overeating. You can go to sex. You can go to gambling. You can go to a myriad of things. And if you happen to be genetically predispositioned toward addiction, eventually, you're going to cross a line of whatever it is you use to escape is going to become your addiction, your dependency. And you know, there you have addiction. It starts with a codependence, trying to fix things outside of yourself to make you feel better on the inside. Yeah. And then, boom, you know, you found an escape. It was wonderful, beautiful. 10 years later, that escape is driving you nuts, you know, and you're in big trouble. How do you get out of it? Mm-hmm. And that's where the program says, you know what? We've tried everything, and I think I need the help of some experts, definitely, you know, some experts in the human world, but I also need something more. I need a God. I need a higher power. I need something other than what these books and everything else is telling me, and, you know, how do I get at that? And I think that's where at the end of the day, worldwide, these programs that do tend to have people reaching out at some point, you know, to a God they understand somehow. But until that stuff seems to happen, there doesn't seem to be any serious recovery from anything. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is wide, folks. This is everything imaginable. I mean, that's why we keep saying it, sharing the burden, that everybody who walks this planet has something to recover from. And for those who don't know that, they have more to recover from. You know, anyone who thinks they're getting close to perfection, you know, they need to come and see us big time. They need to get there now.
Well, I find the reality of Scripture, if you look at the whole Bible, especially in the Old Testament, not as even though we live New Testament, if you study the Old, you look at you know, who in their right mind would present a book like that, where they actually show what people are really like, right? Mm-hmm. When you see each of the characters, even the best characters, have major flaws, right? Yeah. Moses killed a guy. Right? Yeah. And he's even recounted always as a great guy. David, he killed his thousands and or tens of thousands. And yeah. So, you know.
And his girlfriend's husband.
Right. Had him so killed. There's all sorts of issues with yeah. people all the way through. I mean, it's just unbelievable how, you know, we don't even say some of those things today, almost like the, you know, different situations. Anyways, but God allowed that to show that all are sinners, as it says, starting with Adam yeah. all the way through. I mean, he started out well, but failed. And then that there's redemption has to happen for every single person. Mm-hmm. And so that has to look like this. I guess really when it comes down to it, it's very hard to say I'm that.
Yeah.
But then once I've recognized that, as we say, once we realize who we are, then it's dealing with that. And I don't believe you can just finish or do that on your, or accomplish that on my own. Therefore, that's why I say what the scriptures would lead to is that I need a savior, as it says. Yeah. And then, but more than that, it's a daily situation where I'm still this person, even though I've, actually think I think I'm a good or godly person, but at the same time I realize, you know, that one person in that day could turn me into this person that gets angry
yeah.
and wants to react in not a great yeah. or good way. So therefore I need help.
Yeah.
Really, that's what your 10-step program it yeah. would all say, is that we come together, and it's good that people come together and share.
Yeah.
Because then you think, "Oh, I'm not so different."
Yeah.
There, you know what? I'm like the rest of these people, male, female, yeah. younger, older, good families, bad families, whatever they are.
Yeah.
But I need some change inside of me, and I'm admitting it.
Yeah.
And then we're all admitting it. We're all helping or sharing and seeing mm-hmm. what are the best helps.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I feeling this keeps popping into my head today, and I'm thinking, when we go into these jails, you know, when we... Yeah, and we've met everybody from murderers to pedophiles and all of this stuff. And we're actually able to tell them, those in particular, even the worst of the worst, society would say worst of the worst. To me, they're just the same as people with their flaws are just visible today, and maybe ours aren't. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they care as much, if not more, for the simple little things that are bothering us that day, than the things that they've got to, you know, that they're accountable for and responsible for, and in many cases will spend many years in jail or prison, penitentiaries. They care, and we've got people, you know, again, in a sense, what society would say the worst of the worst, and we've had them pray for us. I mean, that's pretty amazing. Yeah. You know, when you're in there and, you know, and somebody who's murdered their husband truly prays from the heart that, I won't feel depressed anymore that day. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's, and I know it's real. Mm-hmm. Just like those cons know when I'm real, I know when they're real. And, mm-hmm. and that's an amazing feeling to come away thinking, man, you know, somebody who's been through that and done these things actually cares. Mm-hmm. When I'm not feeling well, I am, you know, my family doesn't seem to care that much most of the time. I mean, you know, maybe they're used to me not feeling well. I don't know, but, but we get a special love, you know, and which I believe anyway tends to, goad us into the arena that has us, you know, doing better than we could do otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So we're out in society where we are all the time, you know, with our families, friends, associates, business, whatever. And we have an image, you know, we have a performing image that has to measure up in every department to whatever the people in that department mm-hmm. want of us.
Yeah.
Whereas when there, they have no expectations of us whatsoever. And we don't really have any of them. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the only arena that really allows the true expression of love and so on. Maybe we're coming up with something here. I don't know.
Right.
You better take over. I've said it all.
I can't take over all that. But yes, they're very transparent people, I find. Even this is the irony, right? They're the ones in a jail, but they're free, in a sense, transparent in their soul. Mm-hmm. Whereas we're free. We come in, we drive in from wherever. We have freedom. We have to get access into the jail, and we can't take anything in with us. And so it's all restrictive going in, mm-hmm. but then you're inside this place, and you kind of just think, you know, I have all this freedom, but because I'm outside, I'm not necessarily free to share openly like I'm free to share openly in there, because these people, the folks there, are for the most part, some are very quiet, but some are very expressive. They're not inhibited by anything.
Yeah.
And obviously I don't know their histories at all. They're, you know, so, and they don't know mine, so I can share openly. It's almost easier because they don't have an expectation of me either.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to see me tomorrow. But, I don't have to have an expectation of them. But there's just so many odd feelings going mm-hmm. into a jail. And, you know, talking to people who got caught for something, whereas really, you know, I could have got caught probably for something at some point in time and should have been maybe there too. Who knows?
Well, if we got nailed for our thoughts the way, the way we believe in, you know, scripturally, that we're as guilty for thinking it as doing it. So, I mean, where would we be? You know what I mean? Like, that's, simplistic, but you know, I'm thinking what we kind of do when we go into these jails. And folks, I love going to the jails. Mm-hmm. I really do, because I come out lifted more than I can come out of anything else that I know in my life to date. But we go in there, I think we truly somehow leave our baggage outside. And that's a rare ability. Like, and I never thought of it, but we really seem to. Because we go in there, there's a specific way to care and love that helps these people. And we go in, and you kind of hit on it there. We can't physically, folks, take anything in, and to get through the bells and buzzers and machines, we have to take our belts off and shoes in many cases and whatever else is on us. And, you know, we go in there kind of, transparent, I guess, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Vulnerable.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they are. And we meet on a level where we're truly the same, mm-hmm. even though you might be, as I say, with a murderer, and that's not all the time, but or pedophile, or people that have done things, under the influence of different things that are beyond imagination, and we purposefully, in most cases, keep the actions out of our conversations because they tend to be baggage related. So we just talk about healing and about happiness and joy and God and the things that make sense. And,
some of them come out of such bad home experience and environments. That's what I find. And I what it makes me realize is I need to be thankful for a mm-hmm. good home and environment that I was raised in and that I've chosen to have for my home and my children. So that is a definitely positive or advantageous start for life. And, you know, if some of them don't have any of that, they come out of, you know, foster homes and other places. I'm not saying those are bad places, but they aren't the ideal place. Mm-hmm. And so we need homes that are uplifting, positive,
loving,
reinforcing, good ways of life.
Yeah. You know, we need to take them to the jails with us.
Mm-hmm.
And folks, on that thought, and if you want to come to jails, make sure you find us, sharingtheburden.ca. We need a lot of volunteers to satisfy the goals that Sharing the Burden has in mind for expanding the prison fellowship. So my friend Jay is going to take us out, and he might give us a song. I'm not sure, but Jay, what do you got?
I think it's time just for a little bit of a break, and then we'll wrap up the end of the show.